All right, so our third speaker is Dr. John Mercado. He graduated in 2004, and we're bringing the conversation to Quebec, so therefore I'm having a hard time prefacing that by saying we saved the best for the last, because I'm not sure whether...
Or the other way around.
Or the other way around, so I'm not sure whether it's going to make Quebec look better or worse, but we saved Quebec for the last, let's just say, and John is going to... John is now the Chief Medical Officer at the Complexe des Ardennes Center, and he's also practicing as a staff physician at the Jewish General Hospital, and he's very involved in the information, health information landscape in Quebec, and we're very happy that he agreed to come and share with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Professor Werder, and hello to everybody again. How are we surviving? Is everybody surviving? Yeah, with ISIS, with the attacks on the nation's capital, with Ebola, it looked like things were pretty dismal, or for humanity, last couple of weeks. But it seems like things are kind of stabilizing, and it's highlighted a lot of interesting things, at least to me, about technology and where it's going, and some of the potential destructive power of healthcare technology in the world, right? So we have people, major terrorists worldwide, hacking, going on the internet and construing all kinds of plots for destroying the world, even using Ebola to propagating Ebola. They have blogs going on. So the world was all up in arms recently, right? With the cases in Dallas, the Ebola cases. It highlighted a lot of weaknesses in our very advanced healthcare systems in North America, and the need for really having gone through certain scenarios, so really going through scenarios for challenging our systems, for not being complacent with the idea that we have great technology and health connection. Here in Quebec, obviously, over the last few years, our health system has been very frail, access has been weak. And it's been a challenge to try to fix that. But the world over, and through some of the great talks we had before, we see the trends in healthcare and technology. We've seen the rise of telemedicine, mobile health, bridging geospatial gaps, bringing healthcare closer to patients. A lot further ahead, maybe in Ontario and BC, in Canada, but Quebec, although not always known for its health technology, it is known for developing technology in other sectors like aerospace. We have great tax credits for R&D, maybe not on individual tax level, but our R&D, aerospace R&D is second to none. We have great universities. We produce some excellent programmers and developers for which we're known, and we're a good chunk of us are able to manage in both languages on good days. Now, of course, we tend to think of evolution in progress in a very linear fashion. A lot of times, we tend to default to thinking that okay, here's humanity, going from primates to standing up tall, and moving forward towards technology. It brings a lot of great things, but it brings with it a lot of problems, such as back pain, wrist tendonitis, stress, burnout, eye strain, which we see a lot of. And we're seeing an exponential, almost exponential rise. I don't know about you guys, Elon and Sasha, in your practices here, but I know that I'm seeing a dramatic rise in burnout amongst professionals, great people like the people in this room. And it's very disturbing. So it's important for us to be mindful of the fact that with technology, there is advancement, but there's a Newtonian kind of force-counterforce effect, that there's some regression, there's a tendency towards regression on some other levels. And we have to take steps to try to mitigate those before they become real problems. So I just like to flash back to Quebec, keeping in mind that we'd like to move forward, but there are real challenges. And as we move forward, we might create more problems. In Quebec, I don't want anybody, I apologize for the density of the slide. I was up all night with my two-month-old, and I didn't have time to format that at the last minute. But this is just to highlight the fact that, and if anybody's interested, I'll give you the link, but they're just saying here at the bottom of this recent study that physicians are not, the uptake and use of email, EMRs, IT systems for looking at lab data and imaging is still relatively low in Quebec as compared to other places like Ontario and BC. We're still in the 10 to 30% range for a lot of the institutions in Quebec compared to maybe 60, 70, 80% in other parts of Canada. But there are signs of hope in spite of a lot of the challenges. What were some of those challenges? Does anybody have any ideas what's been really holding Quebec back? What has been holding us back? What are some of the top line major challenges? We don't have a shared EMR.
We don't have a shared way of sending referrals.
Exactly.
We don't have money.
Or we do, but we don't know where it's going. It's going to the wrong places.
We don't get.
Yes?
I can relate to climate science. I have kind of a big problem. My orthopedics actually asked for an X-ray. X-ray could not be done except into a private clinic. Mm-hmm. It was done.
Within a week's time?
Within a week's time. And the report was prepared.
Yeah.
Neither my GP nor my orthopedic have access to the information system of the private system. And neither of them knows actually how to get access to that one. It's a password involved. Mm-hmm. To us, all of our students have a password to get access to our system. GPs and orthopedics do not have password to get to the medical system.
Perfect. That was great, right there. We just got some really big stuff right there, right? So no shared EMR, no backbone infrastructure on which to share data and information, which led to, you know, even though there's some spots where things actually do get done, that can be shared to the other people in a timely fashion. So there was still a block. And funding is obviously a huge problem. There was no structured government systematic funding program in Quebec for EMRs, which severely held back the development of companies and EMRs compared to the rest of Canada. And this led to a huge problem for people such as myself. We were trying to get clinics up and certain clinics up and running, particularly interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary care clinics. I was working at a clinic called the Plain Ciel, which was serving in a lower a population of a lower socioeconomic demographic, a very high volume a couple of years back, and we said we need an EMR system. We need something that's really going to help us as a team to look after this population and really get care up to speed. There was none. We did the tour. I did the tour. I went across Canada, went to the U.S., met all kinds of people along the way, looked. Oscar was actually of what was available open source. The only thing we needed tailoring, we needed the French bilingual. There was a lot of issues for the particular. It's being used and was being used in some centers, but we needed something. We wanted to be truly integrated and interconnected. And we were one of the first integrated network clinics at the time outside of hospital. There was only the Jewish General Hospital's integrated network clinic. They're called integrated, but they were far from integrated. Furthest thing from integrated at the time. The Jewish General Hospital, outpatient primary care clinic, and at the Plain Ciel where I was working. I was working at both places. And we said, we have a common need. We need to be able to communicate, share information, look at our interventions on an institutional level, on a populational level, and see what impact they're having. Like elsewhere, and to be able to give this information back to government so that they can start funding things that actually work as opposed to funding things that don't work with the limited budgets that exist. So we met with all kinds of people, and we had some great meetings, and then others that blocked those earlier meetings, a lot of circuitous things. We met with very big companies, the presidents of very big companies and smaller companies and ministers and some ministers. At the end of the day, we ended up working with some smaller local startup groups who had passion and drive to make things work. And we worked with people who really were driven to bring it together. And we formed an association of integrated network clinics, and we started to get things, the ball a bit rolling. And we helped these early startup companies to start building more robust EMR systems. Now, flash forward 2-3 years later, we're starting to see new generation EMRs that are more robust coming into the Quebec market. So I'd like to get into that a bit more and where we're heading now and how we're trying to accelerate change in Quebec on healthcare technology. But here's some interesting things. I was looking up on the internet, some cool and interesting things to inspire us all and give us some hope that Quebec is on the path to healthcare technology leadership. And I was very stunned to find this. Just the other day, I'd missed this. And intensive care unit, ICU, on a plane, built by Bombardier. $20 million project, first of its kind, as far as I know what they were saying in the article in Canada. I don't know what's coming. It's supposed to be taking off in the next few within the next few months. Very interesting. Who would have thought, right? But we are leaders in aerospace and in planes. And when you put the right people together, put some money in the mix, and get it going, we're able to do some pretty neat stuff. And the population is ripe. We're tired of having crappy healthcare. I'm tired of being in a facility, and 3-4 years within the last 3 years, the average wait times in walk-ins were 3 to 5 hours, 6 to 12 hours in emergency rooms, 3 to 5 hours. 2 hours would have been great. But and I had mothers with crying babies in the waiting rooms, and it was this is ridiculous. I said to myself, I can't stay here. And we're here unless we're involved in something to move along the innovation, to use some of the technology that already exists, put it together in meaningful ways, get it going in Quebec, so that these kind of scenarios don't keep on playing itself out. And we're really starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I'd like to share some of those experiences with you in the upcoming slides. So I'm not going to dwell on an accelerated incubator, because I think that's been really well covered by you guys better than to hear. Just to say that we use the word incubators in a broad term. We're starting to narrow down different models of the types of incubators, right? You have incubators more traditionally government-funded, didn't always work very well because it wasn't tied to clear economic performance goals and outcomes and timelines and started seeing more of an outcropping of maybe accelerators and what are called now living labs. Seed accelerators, the kind of key hot terms now are accelerators and living labs, which tend to be tight timelines, tight budgets, government or privately, or mixed public-private partnerships, have some funding tied to it, maybe by some financial backer, VC group or whatnot. And there has to be some clear goals. They have to, the companies are selected according to a rigorous process, and they have to graduate, or they fail. But it helps to push things forward when there's clear goals and objectives. So a living lab is, as defined here, more user-centric, without getting into too much of the details and the workflow and all that. It's basically what you guys are, there are some of the earlier talks. Getting these new companies, ideas, products into the field early so that they get the feedback from the user, the end client, early on, before they start investing all kinds of money on a product that ultimately will not work, or they'll have to spend X amount of more dollars to get it back online with what the user really needs. So user-centric co-development process. is really at the foundation of that. And so one of the successes has been at MIT, but the concept has been around for longer than that. We're starting to see them cropping up in Canada, in Quebec. We're just maybe in the very early stages of these things cropping up, especially for healthcare. Although we're hearing about like a health innovation centers with hospitals, and we focused a lot about hospitals today, and a lot of the historical focus has been in the hospitals. But as we've heard from Dr. Rosenberg, the shift from a ministry point of view is going increasingly towards outside of the hospital, because we want to prevent people from getting into the hospital, because then it costs the system a fortune, and it's just not good medicine, right? We need to do more prevention, pick up things earlier, and treat it earlier. So the focus of this talk is going to be more on outpatient external care. Even though I work at the hospital, we're looking at integrating with hospital, but I want to focus on the network that we were talking about earlier, and a true network, and how do we get to a true network with intelligent technology behind it. So the shift and the trends are towards super hospitals, and we have two almost open. It was supposed to be open in 2004 when we were sitting back in, and when we were doing MD-MBA, the talk at the time was supposed to be open in 2004. We're about 10 years behind, but at least that seems to be a general rule of thumb, 10 years. Eh? If we only started planning 10 years ahead of when we thought, what's it? It's 1 month late. But it's actually started to come up. And in spite of some of the issues that they had and the upper level of management and where funds were going, I'm hopeful. They look very nice. Some of them look very nice in matter of taste and aesthetics. But I think it's promising. But it needs to be backed by a strong network of centers around. So we're going from a traditional model of two big or multiple bigger hospital centers. Not a lot of overlap in what they're doing and redundancy, and a lot of scattered medical centers. There's 2,000 clinics and centers throughout Quebec, but no real communication, coordination between any of this. Towards going towards more of what I call a decentralized hub and spoke model. We still have the hospitals, but we have the we have health centers, and they're looking for local champions, local leader clinics, super clinics, if you will, to lead care in the community, external care. So prior to having the horrendous or problems that require all the equipment that a tertiary care hospital requires, these patients will be looked after, especially patients with chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension, asthma, the big ones that end up costing society a lot and patients a lot. We want to pick these up earlier. We want to manage them better. And so that's why we need to pool our resources into centers that are able to use these the resources better, more intelligently. And that's why they're going towards super clinics. And that's why all the talk from the ministry, we had the fortunate meeting Dr. Quia, who's a neurosurgeon, the current minister, a few weeks before he was elected, in a small group, and we had a chance to talk. And we know that he's fairly aligned I think we're all fairly aligned with where it needs to go. And just yesterday, I was at a conference with the directors of the major clinics of Quebec, and most of us were all saying the same thing, which was nice to see for a change. But even that meeting yesterday was also a bit of a first for Quebec, because there was no association of clinic directors in Quebec a year ago. This week marks the first year of completion of that association. So the early signs of communications are starting to take place. And that's very heartwarming for those of us who've been in the field and trying to get things going. And there's power in numbers. Nobody can do it alone. We're a team. We have to think like a team. And it's a small community in Montreal. The major clinics, we know most of each other, know each other, from the north to the south, so that's all the major clinics. We're on a team, and we're able to talk about what the challenges are and what we need to do to have to offer better care to our patients. So the idea is that super clinics integrate primary care, secondary care, have the best-in-class technologies available, and are able to act as resource centers for our public-private because the patients coming in are on RAMQ, but these are privately owned. So hopefully there'll be a mix of the best of both worlds. And they help the clinics around. So we have to get, they're going away from a siloed model to a more interactive model. So what are we trying to do at our facility at the Complexe des Jardins to help continue in the same vein of innovation and working together with other centers? And our current medical center at the Complexe des Jardins is, we have an interdisciplinary care center called, or a GMF, our group, the Médecine Familiale, but it's really interdisciplinary, multi-specialty, that offers all publicly covered services, most of the full access, complemented by what's not covered, but that's considered still essential services. When people always have back pain, most of us, I think most of, by a show of hand, most of us say that we've had back pain at some point, or will have, but hopefully that could be averted for some of us. But seeing a physiotherapist is first line for almost 95% of musculoskeletal problems, but it's not covered by Medicare, podiatry, et cetera. So these services, though, are covered, are included in a another medical, within an affiliated, it's within our center, called Omnium, and it combines all those services by different therapists, an interdisciplinary team of different therapists, the nutritionists, etc. In a hospital, these are covered, but outside of the hospital, it's not. Right? So, well, we want to do it in a team approach where people, the nutritionist can give feedback, the physiotherapist can give feedback in a team approach. And this model is more and more this becoming the standard for major clinics in Montreal and Quebec. And we wanted to add the next level, which was we call it a living lab accelerator because it's a bit of a hybrid. It's a form of some type of incubator where we want to add a next level layer where we help new groups or pilot test their thing on the ground in an actual medical center, outpatient, external, to complement what's going on in the hospital centers. So we're situated in downtown Montreal in the Complexe des Jardins. It's in the heart of Montreal. So we're well located to provide visibility for people trafficking through. There's 35,000 people a day that pass through the Complexe des Jardins. And our facility, there's four towers. Our facility is on the fourth floor of the Hyatt Hotel Tower. The combined medical space area is about 25,000 square feet, and we're going to take another floor or two fairly soon because we have other projects. But there's on-site radiology, MRI, CT, PET scan, et cetera. The accelerator for us, our focus is primarily on helping to market, helping get into clinics, technologies that help with, particularly we focus on the chronic diseases because those are high yield. So portable devices, EMRs, PHRs, the gamut, that we see as the essential backbone of future healthcare, external care. And the groups that we're looking for to work with our groups are groups that have dedicated, very passionate teams. Passion test is paramount because we've worked with big companies, we've met but what really counts is the people in the group and the passion they have to make something work. Obviously, ideas count, and we hope to have good ideas. We look at the idea, of course, but once it has merit, what we look at really next is the team and behind it. This was the atrium of the Complexe des Jardins. We're on the fourth floor there, and from there, it affords us an opportunity to when we test and pilot them. People, the patients, not only coming through the clinic get to test and pilot, and the physicians, but also because of the particular situation, we're able to demonstrate certain things within the atrium of the Complexe des Jardins to get added visibility to help disseminate this. An issue was dissemination, scalability, which we recognize is very important. by being able to give talks and whatnot in the atriums and the conference rooms of the host, we're able to disseminate some things out a lot faster. And about every month, there's a major congress or conference going on, a medical conference within the Complexe de Chavin. So that's another avenue for us to help spread the word. Some of the technologies that we've talked about already, but obviously the mobile devices, we've all heard or seen of different things. A lot of us have these things. But even more sophisticated things coming down, the pharmacogenomic instruments that will allow us to better tailor our treatments to people's unique genetic backgrounds, and tests which are coming up. So there's companies and different groups that are working on a more specific and adapted testing, which are interesting, but there's a lot of junk out there, and there's stuff that's better. So how do we sift through what's good and meaningful, has real data behind it, and it's not just testing for testing, but it's really stuff that's going to be interesting and help the patient reduce potential side effects of the drug, improve the outcomes with particular medications. So we've talked about care flows and whatnot. So our goal is obviously to look at the care flow, to map the care flows that have existed in our centers and elsewhere, and then look at and in parallel, of course, the supportive technologies, and try not to look at them too siloed, by keeping the patient centered on the whole process. So typical. You know, whether it be in hospital or out of hospital, patient calls or walks into a center, often is told that there's no appointments available or that the walk-in is booked. I don't know how many of you have tried to go to a walk-in recently. Smiles over there. Okay, many of us are physicians, but we're also patients. We have families. We have to consult the system. I know I've waited countless hours recently. I try not to consult at our own center for a variety of reasons, but not that the care isn't good. but the waits are often have been long. Obviously, registration is often hodgepodge at a lot of centers. There's sometimes some triage done by a nurse, not always. Vitals sometimes are taken half done, not done. The doctor is then seen maybe for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes if you're lucky, 15, and then you get your some investigations sent out to do your imaging and blood tests and whatnot. You may go to the hospital where you're going to have to sit and wait, first come, first serve. You have to get up really early, and or you go and do private labs. But the private labs, some insurance covers it, some don't, and it's a mixed bag. And then you have hopefully you have some follow-up. So that's how it's been kind of traditionally done. So we looked at this process. We looked at how it could be optimized. We came up with a bunch of different new algorithms, pre-visit, during visit, post-idealized workflows with integrated technologies. And obviously, for us, the backbone of the technology that needs to support these processes is, at a minimum, is definitely the EMR, a robust EMR, to allow meaningful entry of data into a system that allows some data portability, and ideally there would be a form of queue management system to improve efficiency with kiosks and a PHR, a patient health record. There have been various attempts at this. A lot of these have failed because there's no real. First of all, there's not enough EMRs in clinics with EMRs. Second of all, there's no communication or integration between, or talk between some tested PHRs and EMRs. I'm not sure if everybody is familiar with a PHR or not, but it's just basically the patient's version or the patient-driven version of the medical record. This is where a patient enters in their own electronically, their own health information. So I'm a patient, I put in diabetes, I put it, open up Google Health, tell us my health, whatever, e-health. And that can then be sent to the provider or printed and into the provider. But in an ideal world, that would flow directly from the PHR to the EHR electronically and vice versa. So if a doctor writes a note, I can electronically, if a patient asks for permission, send that to the patient's PHR directly so that there's no need for printing and all kinds of validation steps, extra validation steps that takes too much time to do. But once, so for us, we really wanted to work and focus on getting, first of all, EMRs, and not just EMRs, but solid EMRs that with granular data in Quebec, and then have a queue management and PHR systems that integrate into that. We're not going to get into all this. We've had enough of workflows, and everybody's got to go for lunch in the next few minutes, so 5 more minutes. So, but the purpose isn't to get into detail. It's just to say that time was taken to map out the workflows, pre-visit, during visit, post-visit, and elaborate various models. They can get very hairy and complex, but we try to keep it as simple as possible, as effective as possible, and integrate the technology into it. So there's different stages, of course, of the companies come at. They can come at more earlier stage, kind of university projects or groups that require a proof, still at a stage of need to be able to provide a proof of concept. Others that are market ready, and those that have already completed a product pretty much and need to get it out. I'd like to just spend the next 5 minutes, and then we'll probably be ending there, looking at a little case example. This was where the first group we worked with, which was the EMR, the first functioning, full, robust, which is EMR in Quebec, I consider. The group was called MedFart. Nobody knew of them or heard of them 3 years ago, or even today. I mean, it's just starting. So it took a few years to get it fully off the ground. So we met 2-3 years back. They were, at the time, less than 2 years old. They were pre-launch, early stage, pre-money, pre-everything. But they had some money from it was funded by some angel investor. It was a family member. But the group was very solid. They were a team of engineers. They had worked at Bombardier. They had all the processes down. They knew that they had to start. If they were going to do an EMR, it had to be from the ground level up, thought out very well. And they had a very nice initial infrastructure of an EMR. It had a very nice beginnings of an EMR. But at the time, it wasn't fully fleshed out. And when they approached us initially, we're like, this is a little too early stage. And we actually declined them at the beginning. But they came back a month later. They took the feedback, and they made a significant number of changes in a very short period of time, which for most of the other EMR companies was virtually impossible. To put a comma electronically at some point, it would have been too challenging. It would have taken 6 months for another EMR company. But they were able to do it in 1 month time. So we knew that we had the right team with us, and we had spoken to a lot of larger companies. The strategy was they needed to be paired with a bigger company to have the resources of the bigger company, but we loved the responsiveness that they had and the passion that they had. So we ended up agreeing to work with them. And so it was a co-development project. We structured the meetings with them. We provided them a multidisciplinary care team, a physician, nurse, secretary, a former CEO of another successful IT company. And we got together in a room and we started regular meetings every week for a specified number of hours, and to drill through what they had, what was missing, where it needed to be, in a very phased approach. And we brought together other partners and other contacts locally to help them get the traction they needed. A lot of it is not necessarily always the product you have, but the relationships that you have. And for better or for worse, that's what it is. So you have to have something good, but then beyond that, it's the relationships on how, and testing people, for people to willing to test your ideas. So the initial challenges for them were understanding what the needs of physicians. They were able to, they did it nice, like that initially, but there was definitely things that they didn't know were going to be major problems for the physicians. The speed of the know. It's nice to have a nice product and lots of fields and lots of data, a lot of opportunity to enter data into the system, but it was too cumbersome. Some things had to be really simplified and streamlined. Speed was essential, especially in a clinic, right? With seeing 100 people is no easy feat. As Sasha said, some people are running at a very high rates and they have very low thresholds for anything that's going to remotely slow them down. So speed could not, there had to very little latitude for the EMR slowing down. But we wanted it to be, at the other end, we wanted it to be as complete as possible, as granular as possible, the data, so that we could actually do some meaningful statistics and research, and then be able to pile the data up and look at it as an institution down the road. So it was this delicate balancing act, but we were able to over time come up with something that made a lot of sense. And now that it's been in full production, full use in multiple clinics over several months since this year, it's running very smoothly, and it's only getting better and better with time. And they looked very closely at the integration with workflows. They were timing people as they were going through various spots, recording that as in the development phases. And it was very informative for them to be on site, on the field, to be able to do that. And a lot of medical centers would not have the patience or time to be that. So it took a lot of arm twisting and different things from different people to be, and the physicians and groups to be open to letting them do that. So of course there was resistance to change, as there always is, and always probably will be. But it wasn't so. It was a challenge, but at the same time, it was less than I thought. You know, because we always say it's resistance to change is the worst thing, and it is. It's tough, but it was in all sincerity not so bad with our local physician group, and with our team. So it's always something to be aware of, and it's for sure there is definitely going to be some resistance because people are used to doing it their own way, writing. They've become efficient with writing by hand. They know where to grab their notepads from and everything. But when you give them an EMR, everything changes, right? And when you go with PHRs and everything, it's a bit different. But with a bit of time, people do adapt and they get happy. If you really keep on giving them a sense of ownership in the development process, that you listened to what they said, you adapted it, and within a short period of time, It's better. Of course, navigating the complex Quebec social network is always a challenge, but we'll see what's going to happen with the current ministry. The challenge of the ministry changing over every 4 years is always a challenge for long-term projects, and healthcare is a long-term project, getting it back up and running. So, and with tight budgets, but being able to succeed means a lot. Creating strategic partnerships with key groups that are going to be there for longer than 4 years. Creating, you know, partnerships with big groups, big companies, industry, academic, clinical, it really helps. So groups like McKesson, TELUS, IBM even, has all been fruitful. The group UpToDate, which is a biblical resource for physicians nowadays, has supplanted a lot of like Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine. And a lot. No, I don't. Have you guys referenced that lately? Yeah, I haven't. But UpToDate, we all do, I think, especially in academic teaching centers. UpToDate is now the online biblical resource for UpToDate. Yeah, we like to all look. We like to be able to look up primary articles ourselves and stuff. But the reality is, more is printed every day than anybody could possibly probably read in their lifetime. Which is very different than it was before. So we've met the editor-in-chief of UpToDate from Boston, and we were looking at doing an early pilot to actually integrate UpToDate into the EMR directly and be one of the first sites to pilot that kind of thing in Quebec. We've also talked with IBM, the vice president of IBM, and look at their artificial intelligence system, Watson, which beat the former world chess champion, and look at how to directly integrate clinical decision support system that helps the physician at the point of care to make better clinical diagnoses, like at the point where you're inputting your diagnosis, you know, different differential diagnosis intelligence that's mapped out to the actual patient context, in the context of the patient's information and where you're at. So we're meeting again with Ivan Foster. It's a joint potential project with the CHUM, the Centre Hospitalier de l'Université de Montréal, which is the French super hospital. It's only because of our proximity. We're planning on doing something with McGill shortly as well. But we're looking at a first pilot project to get patients out of the hospital sooner using telemedicine application and this potential IBM clinical decision support system integrated together to provide better care for oncology patients, get them out of the hospital faster and follow them up as an outpatient. So, and as much as possible, we are trying to keep everything integrated. So the EMR, the PR, the telemedicine, the portals, that everything should communicate with each other and create a working model. So we're happy to that now that Medfar has now become the top-rated EMRs in Quebec. It's the fastest growing EMR company in Quebec. They just won the largest RFP in Quebec of over 500 positions. And they've secured substantial second round financing for major groups because of where they're at. Now they're planning to continue in Quebec, go out to Ontario. We have we finally have an EMR that's in a class that's able to actually be exported to other provinces and potentially to the U.S. So now we might be switching the tide of always having to, of actually being able to export some of our healthcare technology. And so, I mean, we've talked about some of the other, there's the telemedicine things and telecare, but in the interest of time, we'll get into that. All of that to say that, you know, in quick summary, Quebec's healthcare technology landscape is primed for a huge leap forward. It's an exciting time. It was a very frustrating time. It's still going to be frustrating, but it'll hopefully be a better time fairly quickly. And with all the bright minds in the room here working together on it, I'm sure that we'll get there. And, you know, as long as ISIS and Ebola take over the world. But I think, but this integrated workflow and, you know, looking through our workflows, having that reflex to look at our workflows, challenge it, test it. Because I tested our nurses and our team a response to Ebola when it was starting on the rise. And we were sent the information protocols from the ministry, but people hadn't tested it. And when we tested it, sure enough, nobody really knew what to do. Even though they read it 1,000 times, we had them read it at least 10 times, they all said they understood it. But when we tested it out, there was huge gaps. Because when you actually apply it in the field, on your spot, it's very hard. People didn't know which room. If I have a patient who just traveled to to Guinea or Liberia and comes in, they're like, yeah, we know what to do. Yeah, so okay, well, let's say I'm the patient. What are you going to do? They're like, well, I might take them to this room. Oh, no, maybe not. I'll take them to that room. And by the time they're finished, the patient's done full tour, infected everybody else's room. And they've infected themselves. They didn't put on their gloves first. They didn't put on their hat first. Because when you're in the thick of the moment, it's hard to think. And that's why physicians are trained. That's why we're all trained. And that's why we need field training. And that's why EMRs and new technology companies and whatever they be need that kind of incubator or accelerator to help them through. That's it. Thank you very much.
In fact, it's very inspiring, and especially the so far the healthcare situation in Quebec has been a little bit depressing. In fact, my students, I mean, they are doing the study in the HR, and they are looking at British Columbia, Alberta, and Ontario, but Quebec was kind of depressing. So it is good to actually see that something is happening in Quebec. And I recently finished a study about return on investment in left-hand health records in primary care in Canada. And in fact, surprisingly, actually, the primary care, the people who are working there, are very into making changes. And not only there was a positive return on investment, but also very creative in terms of being able to provide care better to the patients in it. So hopefully we can also see some from Quebec like this.
Yeah. I'm sure we will. We're already starting to see it. It's much faster now. The momentum, I feel the momentum is really getting a lot of traction compared to 3-4 years ago. There's a lot of, it required a lot of meetings with a lot of people to move, start getting things moving. But now because we have now newer EMRs, and it's not the only one now, and now they're competing with each other, and it's great. It's going to become we're going to have at least 3-4 really solid EMRs that on which other technologies can plug into. And because of the funding that's now available since a year and a half ago, at least for the EMRs, it's unlocking their development, because otherwise, prior to that, there was no money for development for these systems. But now there is, and as long as it continues, they're slashing everywhere, but I don't think they're going to be slashing on the healthcare technology soon. Any other questions? Otherwise, I think everybody's very hungry.
I was going to say we have time for one excellent question, but there's no excellent question.
Even not so excellent question.
Okay. John, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
So I want to end the session by thanking John, Ilan, and Sasha very, very much for taking the time to join us. For those of you who can stay for the afternoon, workshop, there's going to be lunch at the MBA lounge on the third floor. And those of you who are leaving us now, we thank you for joining us and see you next time. Thank you.